Hi there, this is Dan Zare from Coffee with Kenobi, and you are listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Great poll, kid.
Then the Emperor has already won. You were our only hope.
You've seen the show, and like us, you have questions.
Ooh, that was a good one, but try this one on for size.
No question should be left off your list.
Whoa, 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 I got a crazy theory, but hear me out.
But you better have some spares.
Oh, that was one of mine. All right, let's do this instead.
With me, as always, is my friend and Card Squadron winger.
This is Greg Cass, a.k.a. Ion Cannon.
We've recorded at home and across the U.S.
Last summer, we were from the Boston Common. This week, we're in Chicago.
This is day three of celebration.
The show has had many names, but the purpose is the same. Let's share some time at the table.
Ding, ding, it's time for breakfast.
Welcome to The Breakfast Pack, a Rebel Base Card micro podcast series. A returning Star Wars insert podcast series that asks more questions than it answers. Today on Breakfast Pack number 77, we're asking questions on Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 14, the penultimate episode, Flash Strike, that aired on Disney Plus Wednesday, April 24th. Back is my partner in crime and Card Squadron winger, Gregory Cass from IslandCannon.com. Greg, it's good to see you back. And I guess long time no see after last night's epic Dune 2 discussion on the Long Take podcast with Jen PT and Ross Holubin. Greg, how you doing?
I'm good. And a thank you in this forum to Ross for filling in for me last week. You know, as people heard when I popped on briefly, my voice was just completely fried after some combination of allergies plus three long lectures last Wednesday. I just had nothing left, but we saved it. I was able to teach again on Friday, so all was right with the world. And obviously, whenever Ross fills my shoes, they are more than filled. I think he's a 12 to my 10 and a half.
It's not only great, you know, like I said, we have, you know, and he did, him and Jen did. Did they do? No, they didn't do Bad Batch. What was the show they did with Coffee with Kenobi where they did
Ahsoka?
And you know, of course, Ross is no stranger to the program. We've had him on before. He's been on other programs. He's got his own album Cockpit podcast. So he's the goods, and it's always fun when we get him back in. It was fun talking Dune with him last night, and hopefully that show comes out soon. Although I like, you know, when I'm on and I'm not the one producing it, I'm like, phew, you know, good luck editing that thing. You know, it's like, la, I'm just there just kind of making jokes. But once again, thanks to Ross for filling in. It was fun. And as we're getting close, I kind of felt we just kind of needed to be us on this one. And an interesting episode in Flash Strike. Now, if you're joining us for the first time, this is an insert series podcast in the regular feed where Greg and I are going to trade questions to each other that we haven't talked about before, which, for example, near the end of a series gets a little more interesting because you can kind of start playing the numbers of seeing maybe what happens next. Now, but of course, though, this is like a fantasy draft where we could swipe each other's questions, so you better have some spares. But in this case, probably going to be more speculation, kooky theories and whatnot as we kind of try to play out what may happen next week in the series and season finale, as it were. I can't believe we're at the end of the Bad Batch. Yes. But if you haven't had a chance to watch Flash Strike yet, we invite you to please come back and listen after you have watched. All right. I know you've been busy, but for this contest of questions, there are no points, bonuses, or lightning rounds, but there is what we like to call the Greg's List, which is a selection of podcasts and other assorted media that we ingested to see if they have answered any of our questions and then some. It's also one of my favorite parts of the show, as it highlights just some of the amazing work being done out there in the community. We hope you check out some or all, and maybe find a new content creator you like and want to support. I am curious, I know it's a busy time for you, but have you had a chance to listen to any other podcasts?
I'm behind in my feed, but greatly enjoying the coverage of like four episodes ago that I've been listening to. You know, I think the pace of the episodes started to overwhelm a lot of shows, and I saw a lot move into the double mm-hmm. reviews. I think that was Sky Talker's plan all season, and a lot of shows have shifted over to that. And even Jen on Long Take Review on Substack combined the last couple because these are long seasons. You know, I think we all enjoy Ahsoka or Kenobi where we get six or eight and you get a real kind of condensed experience. But Bad Batch has always asked for a lot. So I've been enjoying a lot of my usuals, Coffee with Kenobi, Blast Points moved their coverage to the Patreon, but that's okay. We can follow to that. I want to shout out a podcast here in town, in Boston, which is the HoloNet Marauders, who I feel have leveled up this season and have been getting good guests. They were on Star Wars Explained themselves, and I think swapped a guest spot with Alex and Molly. And I'm particularly shouting them out right now because they rented a full theater for The Phantom Menace next weekend. And are inviting Boston area Star Wars fans on May 5th to go. I cannot guarantee they have spots left, but if anybody's listening to this and is in the Boston area and wants to go, find them on Instagram, DM them. They were keeping track of how many seats they could fill and were providing the theater free of charge to any fan who wants to go. So that's why they are at the top of my appreciation list this week, because I love me a good Phantom Menace screening.
Agreed. And, you know, I kind of see that in my feed as well. And it was nice actually to see the return of Krypton to Alderaan, which I think was also trying to catch up a bit, as well as, well, you know, the regulars, Podcast Stardust, who has been killing it. I think you were on recently to record a show with them for The Phantom Menace, right?
That's correct. I did 10, or it was more like 12 minutes of The Phantom Menace. I got from Qui-Gon and Padme walking into Watto's shop through the dinner scene, which is a very climactic 13 minutes of Phantom Menace. It was a lot of fun to record with them. And they will admit this. We also recorded a second one that's covering a vacation in June when Dennis has to take some time off. And so we recorded a whole episode about the High Republic, and it was really, really fun to get to geek out with them. So look for that. I think it actually ends up dropping the week Acolyte starts, but we'll be there.
Oh gosh. I also picked up Thank the Maker, which I was kind of curious. I think I even maybe punched up RFR and a couple others that are escaping me at the moment, just to kind of see, you know, because sometimes when you get towards this one, you're really kind of curious to see where people are at and, you know, are the expectations meeting it? And I think we keep joking as we did with Anthony from Force Ghost on, you know, you're not ready. I don't know. I'm kind of ready. In some ways, you know, it has been a marathon. We've been doing this, we've been doing this week after week. And since The Batch brought us, it's always going to have a place in my heart. But I am kind of excited and maybe a little bit of, you know, trepidation to see this kind of end, because I think after three seasons, and you hate to kind of build up false expectations, but I'm kind of curious. It's like, you know, how are you feeling as we're kind of bringing this ship to a landing, as it were?
It's a really good question, because all those folks who said you're not ready, they'd seen through this episode, right? The finale was held back entirely. And I don't know, maybe I'm losing the expectations game, but I feel like I was pretty ready for everything that's happened. You know, it's been roughly my expectations on through. You know, that's not to say any of it was bad, but I don't think there's been any kind of curveball that really changed my expectations really from the beginning of this season on. And setting aside that fatigue, because that's not how I'll remember this show, even though it's a bit of a marathon, this has been a fantastic ride. I know this is going to lose me some fans on the internet, but I am not somebody who loves Star Wars animation. I like Clone Wars. I like Rebels. I think I definitely saw every episode once, but I'm not somebody who rewatches those all the time like a lot of people do, and no disrespect, obviously. I think for me, Bad Batch is, even if next week is like a horrible, be the one I remember most fondly, perhaps my favorite of the three. just because of the community we've built up and doing the show and the analysis. And to me, you know, that's what Star Wars, especially in the recent era, is about. It's what you all build around it, with what the community is, much more than what the thing is. And, you know, that was true as people have listened to, you know, Kenobi for me will always be the celebration where we really got to celebrate Kenobi. And, and you know, Ahsoka will be the debates I got to have with people, you know, about whether it should have been a cliffhanger or they should have had more of an ending, for example. So I think, you know, Bad Batch is going to stay towards the top of this kind of last post, let's call it the post film phase of Star Wars, though the films are supposed to be coming back.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. So I just think the pacing with this, you know, is something that I'm going to kind of remember, because one, Bad Batch is really our first, you know, dive in together outside of the original podcast that, you know, episode that we had you on. But I think you're right. You know, like, I think some of these series will kind of get, you know, attached to the memories we have of where we were in our fandom. Kenobi being, of course, you know, the, you know, celebration Anaheim, you know, and then from there, you know, seeing the Andor trailer, you know, and me kind of like, you know, getting the Cantina cast's reaction of the trailer as it dropped during Celebration. And of course you have the Batch, you know, like with that. And so, and we're getting ready for Acolyte, which is going to be, I think, kind of fascinating, because it might spur a bunch of new questions. But it's also been kind of like interesting to see some of the fans and people that have kind of like followed us. And I just want to say shout out to, you know, Sal Berry over at Punk Junk, and, you know, Kyle Scully, friend of the show, who kind of like, you know, feed us with questions. Sam Tashima, you know, on Instagram, who like we get to engage. And of course, there's the thread that we're on with everybody else. And so, you know, it's sad to see some of this end, but I do think that this season they've done a really good job. And I think, you know, unlike, say, let's say season three of Mando, where there was a little bit of, you know, weaving in and out, this really kind of stuck to form and really was pure Bad Batch. I think there was a couple of really intense episodes, but I think it's really kind of kicked back in. And, you know, there's still a lot of questions left to be answered. And I think they've done a really good job of keeping us like, well, there's still some things they're keeping really tight to the vest, and I guess we'll just have to watch. And at the end, you know, when we have this discussion, you know, next week and the weeks to follow, we'll then kind of see, like, have to kind of reflect on, you know, where are we at there? But now we're sort of still in this holding pattern. Still some things could happen. You know, I think each of us kind of have a hunch of what might happen, and I do want to kind of get into that before we kind of wrap up. But to kind of kick things off tonight, and I know, like I said, these might be more question-y, speculation-y type things, but I am kind of curious what you're leading with tonight.
Yeah, well, all I'll say is, just in regards to what you just said, is the other way this show has continued to really deliver is the visuals. And I don't have a... Sometimes I sneak in the how great did this look question, but I won't fake it with that tonight. But I will just say the sequence with the shuttle and the V-wings and crashing into the jungle, there was some really complicated, wonderful animation there. And this crew, you know, I think they are so good that they don't get shouted out nearly enough, because everybody's just like into the reality of the show. And it, you know, there are sequences, especially when you get into starships, that could just be a live action Star Wars movie, and you can't necessarily tell that it's animated. So it's really wonderful. So, I mean, I'm already hedging because they're all so silly in general, but I didn't get to really be a geek about him last week, but I continue to find Rampart really enjoyable, and his role he's now fallen into. So in this one, he has the line that, like, maybe, you know, you clones are just really quite foolish. Like, maybe we shouldn't be doing any of this. And so my silly question in regards to that is maybe Rampart right? Should the Bad Batch have, you know, cut their losses and just accepted this, or gone about it entirely differently? Is this mission a fool's errand, or is it all just what has to be done to rescue Omega?
I think it has to be done, I think, the way that they're doing it, only because it's what they know best. And I think, you know, like when we've seen these last couple of missions where they've been really focused, you know, and we kind of, you saw them struggle at the beginning of the series, trying to figure out like, how are we going to meet, get ends meet, right? We're going to, how do we feed ourselves? How do we do this? And kind of like, where are we? We're in our place. I think they're really at their best when they're just focused on it and not necessarily caring too much. It's like, well, we got to get there, right? Just like last week, it's like, you know, hey, the coordinates, they feed them there. Like, well, we got to do on that. And everybody was just in lockstep. And, you know, maybe that's just a sign of their, you know, genetic makeup. Maybe in some cases, Rampart is a little right because they just don't think the same way that maybe a non-clone does. But it's very on brand for Batch. And that's what I think I like the most is that, although with the Juggernaut and with the crash, I'm like, I'm not okay. The crash, maybe there could have been, all right, someone could have been seriously hurt or someone, you know, so, but I do think that they are getting saved for either a glorious death or they're going to get away and through the skin in their teeth. But I would say in this part, I think it's a little bit of both. I think Rampart is picking up the fact that they are clearly different, but I just don't think that they could do it any other way.
Well, I really like the way you answered that. And what came to mind is Anakin and Obi-Wan in general, in like late era Clone Wars, how they kind of feel invincible. So they drop into the middle of a battle droid army and they just take care of it. And, you know, that carries over into Revenge of the Sith when Kenobi's famous hello there is right in the middle of just a giant, meeting of separatists, and he shouldn't have survived that, but his arrogance puts them there. And I think how I'm reading your answer a little bit in my own mind is the Clone Force 99 have earned a little arrogance, right? They they did lose a member last season, let's not forget. But well, wow, and where are those theories going? Because we only have one episode left, so maybe they were all wrong. But it is kind of a reminder that like they, I don't know if it's they have nothing left to lose or they don't really care whether they sink or swim, but it just feels like there's a slower, more careful way to do this. Maybe calling in a lot of those friends that you have picked up over the course of three seasons. And the fact that we're just rushing in kind of dunderheadedly. And, you know, the crash was spectacularly animated, but was really like bad strategy. And you know, I think the show has made us believe they're kind of just slipping through and taking each chance they get and they have to. But it just really seems like, yeah, I think there's a little grain of truth to what Rampart's saying. And they are just foolish to be doing this and to be doing it this way.
Ooh, didn't Jyn Erso said we'll keep taking chances until they're all spent? And I think going back to them, you know, kind of taking the markings off their armor, to losing, you know, the Havoc Marauder, to kind of like kind of a going for broke. I mean, it, in a way, it almost feels like it's setting us up for a Rogue One ending where you go like, is there a future for the Batch? And it, you know, like in some cases, you're right. This could have gone a different way, whereas like we know we're going back to Tannis. But you kind of feel like, okay, over set up over a few seasons, like, hey, we've made a few friends, a couple of connections, we can call in some favors, you know, get some solids, as it were, if I want to keep taking that metaphor out. But that's not this. But it's also, you know, considering how hard it is to get to Tannis or how hard they have said it is to get to Tannis, there might not have been that way just because of how locked down it is and that you almost kind of have to do it this way. And so, someone who is a little more, you know, could have also said, well, they're doing this because they're speeding up because they know they're trying to get this done. You know, this almost has that feeling of, you know, remember the first couple, three seasons of Lost were really long, and then it really started speeding up, and it, you know, yeah. And then it crashed in a much more spectacular fashion, I would say, but in live action. But in this case, you know, did they always knew that they were going to be three seasons? Did it kind of muddle along, and then they kind of go, oh, you're getting three. Oh, okay, so we're going to have to speed it up. Mm. Only the Filoni and company know for sure, but I do think it's still in their fashion, and I think at least how it's been set up, okay, I'm buying in that this was, you know, that there was really a way rather than like me playing like an RPG type game, like a StarCraft or something, where I will bunker for about 3 hours and then go in with like 10 to 1 odds. That's how I usually assault something. No one else would be willing to play with me, but that's how I do it. But like, these guys are definitely not that. They're going to say, hey, oh, there's a ship. Let's go. And we're going now. And I don't care if they can see us or not. We're locking on.
Well, I love what you said, although when you invoked Rogue One, my first thought was, you know, one of those shield gates would be awful handy on your really secret Imperial installation. There's, you know, it's different creators create Star Wars things for their different needs. But then you start to think about, well, maybe it's just barely too early for one of those. But like, it's about the same time period. They should lock one of those around their super secret base, maybe. But really well said, and an excellent point. So I want to hear what you're scraping by with some questions tonight.
Oh, and by the way, don't think that, you know, some of those shield generators and some of those rules, you know how rules are. Rules are made when somebody does something wrong. And I think that, somebody's going to be exploiting what somebody did wrong here.
Good point.
But I want to keep that Rampart train going, because that kind of was in line with something where he was kind of talking to Crosshair. He's like, you're like me. You think only about yourself. And Crosshair's like, I've changed. And Rampart wasn't buying it. Now, we have seen Crosshair do the change. But was there anything in that other than just Rampart being Rampart, which I have loved Rampart since we have rediscovered him. But was there anything in that line? Because, of course, there isn't anything that's throwaway.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I do think it's primarily just, you know, antagonism, because it has been a very quick change that Rampart was not there to witness. I still go back to, and I'm going to try the sports term, the yips that Crosshair has. And I think that is still a sign that he's not a totally changed person, right? Like, actually, and I alluded to this last night, my son and I just went and saw Spider-Man 2 in the movie theater, which was a riot and a lot of fun. But if people don't remember the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man loses his powers because he's having kind of an existential crisis. He can't decide who he wants to be. And so he loses the ability to shoot webs like you do, it happens to all of us in our teenage years. But I do think there's a little of that going on with Crosshair. Like, I think he was sure he had left the Empire, but he's still not sure who he wants to be. Right. And that feels a little like Finn in Last Jedi, who has left the First Order but hasn't really signed on for the Resistance. He's kind of attached to Rey and cares what happens to Rey, but hasn't really signed on. And I think, you know, because he's loyal to Omega, he's going along with this mission, but he's not really like really interested in being a part of Clone Force 99. And so I think maybe Rampart's sensing that, right? That Rampart part is feeling, yeah, I don't think he's about to like re-enlist back into the security at Mount Tantus, but I think he is noticing that Crosshair hasn't fully committed. I'm just going to go out on the crazy limb and say, to me, that puts Crosshair pretty high on the chopping block. I think one big sacrificial act to kind of confirm that he was their brother all along, and, you know, Hunter laying, standing over a dying Crosshair, saying my brother, kind of feels like where that character might be headed, just to do a little irresponsible speculation.
No, I figured at some point, we were going to start naming off characters that weren't going to make it. So I would say Crosshair, identifying Crosshair early does kind of make sense. And it was interesting when Crosshair said, you know, she helped me escape when she could have, you know, she could have left me. I owe her one. And I thought that has a different tone to it. You know, now that you kind of think about what Rampart said, and you go, okay, but, you know, maybe it's going to take, you know, Crosshair dying, saving her, to maybe turn Rampart. So it'll be kind of interesting. But, you know, like I said, I think Rampart's dialogue has not only, you know, it made the episodes a lot of fun, because he gets to be that voice that was kind of missing from them, as far as like, what are we doing? You know, kind of like maybe a surrogate for the audience so to speak. But it will be interesting now, Rampart's predicament. All right, what's your next one?
I am of two minds on this issue myself. So I have the two wordings of this question. here's the kind of more cynical version of this. Should the kids just sit tight? I mean, I appreciate their scheming. I really enjoyed Omega leading what I will call the children's crusade, right? She's kind of organizing them and building her own little squad. But at the same time, I think if they can tell that something so powerful is on its way to them, maybe just wait. Maybe just sit tight. So, you know, I guess you can answer that directly or just take it as a kind of, how do you think this is going to play out? What kind of predictions are you making? Are the kids going to actually just like be waiting outside with suitcases for the batch to pick up? I don't know what they're going to pick them up in, but how do you think this is going to play out?
Well, of course, the Zillow beast in the room says that chaos will be ensuing very soon. But I love the fact that it's going to be on many fronts. And I do think instead of having it be a little linear. Now, you're right. You're only as fast as your slowest member, which means the child holding the child, as it were. Mm. But I do think, you know, I kind of like it because I did have a 74 Jailbreak on repeat on this morning's commute with AC/DC. So I was getting a kick out of listening to Jailbreak, and kind of seeing, but I, you know, it's another fascinating thing because Omega was like, oh yeah, they can't keep me here. She was already devising her way out, which I kind of love. I mean, like I'm bought into it because I think after everything we've gone through, she's escaped once. She knows where the cracks are. Literally, she knows where the cracks are.
Yeah.
And it's amazing she didn't get tagged along the way with one of those automated things that were going along. But I do think that she may be what's responsible for the Zillow Beast getting going. I mean, you know, I think it's just going to be, you know, you're thinking like, are they going to blow up the base? And you go like, oh my God, that's perfect that you got a Zillow Beast down there, because that could be the answer to a lot of questions that we might have. But I do think that, yes, once again, Rampart would be right. Sit tight. The same thing to do is sit there. But I think in this case, the more chaos we sow, I think the bigger and more payoff we get, whether or not we might lose a child. And like I said, it's pretty, you know, like it'd be pretty dark if they killed off a child. So I think with the introduction of them, you got to figure they're going to make it. But I just want to see how much chaos ensues.
Yeah, I mean, I think that feels right. I don't know that they're riding the Zillow Beast out into the sunset, but, you know, if they loose it and that's causing an immense amount of chaos tearing apart the base, boy, that sure sounds like something that would set Mount Tantus behind for about 20 years until, Pershing can build it back up. So that works. I guess where I sit is, I think, watching this episode with Omega, it feels like part of what this show has been is the education of Omega, right? And there are, again, it's starting to look like there are just some unfulfilled wishes. I don't think Alpha and Omega will meet, for example. But to make it the story of how this young girl who was, you know, kept in isolation on Kamino and safe, learns how to be a member of a team, learns how to be a family. Like, that's a good arc for a show. And if we leave this show having her being, I mean, she's been literally trained, but now we're seeing the effort of that training come to fruition. And she knows what to do. She knows how to do recon. She coordinates them and looks like, you know, she's not somebody who will have to spend her life just sitting and waiting for somebody to rescue her.
Oh, all right. I was kind of curious, and I did kind of want to bring this up because I loved how Echo got off of the ship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kind of, you know, literally thanks for the hand. But I thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, and I know that Sal had brought up, was kind of curious, like, oh, I guess, you know, I guess the hands work like that. But I don't really think so. I think maybe in this case, what looked like a Death Star droid might have had that style of hand, because maybe if he has jurisdiction over that section, he could have a one-off where he's able to remove a hand and it's on by a scomp or whatnot. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, oh, Echo has a hand now. And I'm kind of wondering, do you think it might have been the first time he's kind of considered that? You know, I think it's one thing to kind of think of, you know, I can't speak for someone who is differently abled, right? So I'm not going to try to assume, but it is interesting that, you know, we did get a little bit of the hand and that thing. And I'm just kind of wondering, he's never tried this before, maybe, but what do you think about the hand and, you know, him? I mean, obviously it worked out, but it was kind of interesting that, you know, like, well, we haven't really seen that before from him.
Yeah, I think I would first applaud the show for addressing it, because it seems like one of those things that a cheaper, a lazier show would have just had him like always holding his arm behind his back or something when, you know, engaging with other troopers. And the show kind of acknowledged what fans would have loved to call out on the internet to say like, oh, I'm actually, nobody should notice that, blah, blah, blah. But they go for it. And it did remind me a little, I think, well, this would have been a Ross question, but I think K2SO has one built into his wrist, right? Who, when he takes down the other K2 droid, he kind of has one pop out and kind of scans its memory. I kind of think of it like, I mean, Echo's wrist is like the greatest Star Wars tool of all time, but I do think, you know, we just kind of, the silliness of Attack of the Clones showed us that like a battle droid head can just be like zapped onto a protocol droid's body and vice versa. So I feel like there's some kind of universal joint system that these things can all work with, and Echo has that built into his. To the kind of secondary question, like, I hadn't thought about that. I mean, we are in a universe where prosthetics are very common, at least by the time of the OT, it seems. Well, no, and Anakin has a very advanced prosthetic prior to this moment, actually, right? In the Clone Wars. So I think what that means is, you know, he has made a choice not to go that route. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if what you're noticing is him thinking like, oh, maybe I should have not, right? Maybe I should have gone for that. And maybe that's a sign of where he'll go eventually, right? Kind of blend back in.
It is interesting because it's sort of like he kept having to take it off, and you're sort of like, maybe he's had it before and it's just one of those things where he keeps losing it. And he's like, ah, never mind. But I do think that, yeah, in his mind, the scomp is probably a lot more useful. It certainly wasn't holding it back as far as like firing and things like that. But it was kind of interesting, but I am kind of glad that they kind of brought that in, because not only was it a clever way for him to get off, but it was also a nice thing to kind of ponder, as it were. All right. What do you have next?
Let's see. I guess I
want to get your like really kooky theories. I'm almost like, I can't wait. I'm like a kid at Christmas.
Well, here's my last normal one. what will Carr do before the end? So I think for a long time we've been predicting she'll choose the side of the clones. And I think if we were keeping score, maybe we would give ourselves a point that she chose the side of the clones in this episode. But is that enough? Like, does she need to do something bigger? Like, she has gone along with experimenting on these children, and I'm not ready to forgive her yet. I want her to be a good character, but I don't see that she has redeemed herself yet. And so I guess I want to know what you think is in for that character.
What I kind of loved is that exchange between her and Echo, where she really cracked. You know, I think that it's been kind of gnawing on her, but I like the fact that much in some ways of them, you know, getting to the planet without really having to do a lot of planning. I think she's kind of in that same boat where I think she's been holding back, trying to tell somebody like, whoa, everything was fine. And I worked with you for years and I know what we're doing, but the children really kind of struck a chord. And I like how she wasn't really quite sure, but I think, you know, being with Echo, I think that's a really, you know, like if you're going to put a commissar in that room, Echo is a great commissar. And, you know, I think if anything, he's going to, you know, like, she may not know, you know, like fully what a plan is, but I think he's going to really kind of help her along and kind of help her kind of like make things really clear. And I think she will be like, oh, hey, we're going to do this and this. And I'm like, not that she's not capable of like thinking anything for herself as far as that's concerned. But I'm just saying that I think Echo is a great catalyst rather than, you know, I mean, Omega's been kind of gnawing on her. But I do think that this has added up, and I'm glad it was Echo there, because I think that is another, you know, piece of this where you have Hunter and company, you have Omega and company, and now you have Echo and Emery, and you got Hemlock and Azillo Beast out there somewhere. And so you're like, yeah, come on, man. But that's my feeling on it. What about you?
I think she has to do something bigger. I'm not going to go heroic sacrifice again, but I think where I'm leaning is I want her to be the one to take down Hemlock. Again, ooh, wild speculation, but you know, she's gone along with this. She has made science her master, and if that has led her to Hemlock, it feels only right that she'll be the subtle knife stuck in his back while he's, you know, pontificating in some way or something like that. But I think she would be the perfect one for that, because Hunter doesn't really have that rivalry with Hemlock, right? Like the rest of the squad doesn't quite focus their energies on him. They hate the Empire. They hate the way the clones are treated. They love Omega. They don't really hate him. Whereas I think if she is the one who prevents any future children from getting hurt in this way, that feels right to me.
Maybe she can be riding the Zillow Beast when it goes after Hemlock. There you go.
Maybe.
Everybody wins. Everybody wins. I'm looking through my... okay, so we've done that and that. Yeah, getting into close to speculation. You know what? It's interesting that... just one last thing on that, and this is a sort of a stem of a question. I was kind of curious that Omega did apparently talk about the Bad Batch to Emery.
That was very cool. I really liked that, mm-hmm, as well, that she knew enough about Echo to recognize it. And at first it was like, oh, of course, but also like, you know, really touching and warm that in all those weeks she cared enough to share about them.
Thank you for answering what a question I hadn't really formed. I was like, there's something to that, but I just didn't have a question to wrap around you. So you have done well, my friend. Because let's see. Yeah, because most of mine are sort of like speculation and Zillow Beast related.
Well, right. I think it's speculating time.
All right,
we're closing in on the end. It's time to quote Doctor Strange. We're in the end game now. So what do you want to speculate about? Ask me a question and we'll dive right in.
Okay, so I don't want to dance around it, but I am kind of curious. What do you think is going to be the catalyst? So we have them on the outside trying to get in. Omega is doing her plan, and we have Echo. So who lights the spark that whatever, I don't care. But who is the catalyst in all this that really is, that starts the chain of events?
I think it's got to be the Zillow, right? I mean, it's like if you show us a gun, the gun's going to go off, right? Chekhov's gun. It's got to be the Zillow, and I think it could be something really big. And, you know, I think you're right that the disruption and the chaos will distract, but also the Zillow, I imagine, is going to make a giant hole in the side of this secret base and just make everything else a little easier to get all that together. And, you know, it's really, really exciting that they brought the Zillow Beast back at all. That honestly, I think we said it at the time, it felt like one of those Clone Wars threads that would never be picked up. And then to get it back here at the end, that it's not only been picked up, but it's now like that earlier episode was just to remind you so that they could do something big and something Kaiju Godzilla wonderful. Don't go see Godzilla punching Kong, not worth it. Go see this and see you know, something really big and special happen, and that just feels really, really wonderful in a fan servicey way. You know, fan service when done poorly should be made fun of, but like investing in a story and letting that story pay off a decade later is really wonderful.
You know, and the fact what Palpatine, you know, captured a Zillow Beast and had it contained oh, Azilla Beast, you know, foiling Palpatine's plans. Whoa, now there, that's like you said, that's a callback. But you're right. I do think that, I think once that Zilla Beast, something happens to it. I think there's a lot of like, all right, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, and then boom. But what I like about the Zilla Beast is the fact that it's not just, hey, we're going to go plant a bunch of explosives and then it tick, tick, boom. I like the fact that this is really, it's just as unpredictable, but it certainly helps their cause. And I think can, you know, like I said, I think it's going to be fun to see it kind of basically just destroy the whole place.
Hmm.
Well, and so I was doing some quick Googling to confirm this. This is a little bit of a spoiler, but I think we're okay with kind of public information that's out there, right? So my bigger question is someone else coming in this episode, in this finale, right? You just described all the pieces that are currently on the board. Right. My question is there another piece coming or multiple pieces coming? And so the slightly spoiler version of that question is, we know the last episode is titled "The Cavalry Has Arrived." Hmm. Now, that's not "The Cavalry Is Coming." That is "The Cavalry Has Arrived," which... I think that's why I was Googling, is just to double check that I had that correctly. So is anyone else coming, and is it okay if it's not, if these are the pieces on the board and that's it?
I'm glad you brought that up because it does bring up our operative, our CX2 clone, yep, that they made a big fuss about, and the program that got them programmed that goes, you know, back further. And so That would be a disappointing thread if it wasn't at least mentioned and we got out going, what did that really mean? I think that to me would probably be one of the more, like, you know, finger wagging things that'd be like, well, you got our hopes up because when, you know, like the, you know, is it the techpocalypse and all that kind of stuff. But also you still had Commander Cody out there as well as Fee. You know, somebody, you know, like, we figure somebody's surviving this, and we'll get to that. I think that's going to be the last speculation question, if I can speculate about our speculation. But I do think that there are, yeah, with Fee and with Commander Cody, possibly, although I'm starting to think not so much, but with the operative, and yeah, there are people that we need to kind of see, and in what order will we see them? But I do think that maybe Hemlock could potentially have one more, like, fail safe. Maybe he has the little glass red button that he pushes going in case that Zilla Beast gets out and we're all right. You know, I got to get the plans and me off this planet. Otherwise, you know, Palps doesn't get, well, maybe that's what happened. I don't know. Maybe that's, yep, why he looks like death warmed over when he sees him. But what other pieces am I missing there?
I think it's the clones. The prediction, this is, again, we're just being so irresponsible. I want to be very clear. I steal that from the Force Center podcast. They say speculate responsibly, which means, sure, dream up whatever you want, but don't set yourself on it so that if it's not right, what you predicted, it's a disappointment to you. I want this last episode to be called Attack of the Clones. I see a reverse Order 66, where they can put out a message and kind of call all the clones together for one last stand of the Grand Army of the Republic. Mm. And, you know, I think Echo's inside the base. There's got to be a communications array. And like you said, he could get the word out to Cody and Rex, and Cody and Rex have a network. I say, you know, let's bring on all the clones for one last stand to save their sister. And that feels pretty cool, but I won't be disappointed if it doesn't happen, or I will try my best. But I think that's, to me, the only piece that's out there. And what you said about CX is really interesting, because I cannot come up with a good reason why he wasn't in this episode, right? Like, mm-hmm, why wouldn't he have been out leading the team in the woods? Why wouldn't he have been skulking about with Hemlock, kind of planning, right? Kind of like Krennic on Scarif is kind of stalking around with the Death Troopers, kind of moving like that. Like, he should kind of be here if he's going to be in the finale. And maybe it really was just he was being built up to be the one to capture Omega, and that's the end of his arc. But it felt so much more than that at times. But I'm not going to let that previous speculation hurt my expectations.
Well, no, and you bring up a good point is that, they were identified. Clone Force 99 was identified as being a part of the security breach that Hemlock knows about. He might, you know, we might see him very well recall because, you know, the CX was able to really take care of himself and the Bad Batch. And so you were talking before about like Hunter and them didn't really have, you know, they're not really gunning for Hemlock, but they could be gunning for the operative. So it is interesting that if he kind of pulls him in, it's a quick way to get him back, and then let's have to deal with him. But is there a little extra drama? Do we find that clone trooper unmasked? Is it Cody? Is it Tech? Is it just some other clone? Who knows? But I think it's a way to bring it back, like you said, with Krennic and the Dark Troopers. But also, when you're talking about Attack of the Clones, well, you know what? We haven't really mentioned the fact there are a bunch of clones there that they're trying to save as well. So that could be your because the Zilla Beast will definitely, if getting out, you know, I have to say it can't be speculation. Zilla Beast is getting out. Okay, I can pretty much put a mortgage payment on it. But as far as, you know, there are lots of stormtroopers and clones on this that are fighting for Hemlock, and you do kind of need some people out. So if you get some clones out and armed, much like, you know, the Narkeena 5 guys, you get them with, you know, get those guys with some guns, and they are a formidable force, as it were. So that's how I kind of feel. I think you get the clones there, and hopefully Hemlock calls in his personal bodyguard operative.
All right, I'm calling it. We got two last predictions that have to be made. You named one of them, and I'll name the other one. So all cards on the table. This all is right. Our last chance, and we want to make sure people can laugh really hard at us next week. Number one, who survives out of the Bad Batch? You don't have to go into all the characters, but who survives out of the Bad Batch? Number two, does Omega use the Force before the end of the show next week? Take them in whatever order you want.
I'll take them in reverse order. I don't think she uses the Force. I don't think they have had enough time. Now, if there is a situation where a latch needs to be thrown and maybe Jax or one of the other clones has the ability,
true,
I can buy that. Or something, but I don't think that she has enough wherewithal at this point. There isn't enough training that she would be able to focus and do something, or would know that that's an option. You know, she spent some time about Asajj, and I can't believe we made it this far without mentioning Asajj as one of our potential callbacks. But hey, I'll throw it on the table. But as far as who makes it off, I think you make a good point. I think Crosshair's redemption, I think he has a spectacular death. And I do think that I think a Batcher needs to go. Now, I'm not saying Batcher needs to go. Hell no. you save that dog, and that dog needs to be back in that episode tomorrow at the end. Batcher needs to be around because I need the toy. but I'm still of two minds about Hunter and Wrecker. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But of course, you know, I think the Batch itself as a unit is done. I'll go ahead and put that, like, one or two of them may make it off. Like, you could make a case for, you know, like, yeah, I'm not even sure Echo. I could see Echo, you know, somebody taking the mantle, maybe not. But let's just say I think definitely Crosshair is probably out. The Batch as a unit is out. It's a tough call with Hunter and Wrecker. I'm not sure that I don't know what their deaths would mean, but I could see it. I could see all the Batch going in that case, and maybe Echo survives with Omega and maybe even Rampart. I have a funny feeling Rampart's going to survive just because those type of characters usually do.
They find a way.
I don't think Hemlock survives. I think Hemlock is at the bottom of a Zilla Beast's stomach. But I don't even, you know, like I said, maybe Emery. I don't know. Hard to say. All right. Call me out on it. What am I saying wrong on this one?
No, I think I'm not that far from you. I'm gonna say 100% Omega, which you implied but didn't state. But yes, I think Omega's good. I think Crosshair is gone by the end of the episode. I can very easily picture Wrecker and Omega living out their lives on Pabu together, two of them with their good relationship. But I can also see Hunter being a part of that picture after this. And I really like the way you just phrased that, which is, what would their deaths mean at this point? And part of my struggle with that is, I think Hunter has just been in the total backseat this season. Like,
yes.
I feel like I haven't thought of him nearly that at all. And so if this were going to be the story of a heroic father figure sacrificing himself to save his daughter figure, I know they're not literally those relationships. I just feel like we haven't built up to it in any way. So it would really surprise me at this point if that were the case. So I'll say Hunter and Wrecker survive and the three of them go off having renounced their ways and they really, really go into hiding. Because I like also what you're saying about the Bad Batch retiring. I'm going to go the other way on Omega with the Force. I think she uses the Force to calm and control the Zillow. That's my Ooh. Prediction. I have continuously thought she had that kind of Force power. That's the kooky theory that brought me to the dance. I'm sticking with it.
I love a man who sticks to his guns on that. And that would be clearly awesome. But yeah, it is something where we can get where if you think about, you know, other series where this could have potentially been the one where a lot of things could have fallen and then you get sort of the epilogue that would have been the last show. And so in this case, it's going to be interesting that, you know, will it happen? Will it happen relatively fast? And I think so, because, or you're going to need to have a little longer episode than 23 minutes, because that's a lot to kind of pack in that and then unpack that. To me, that's the worst thing, is that you have all this incredible action, you have all this, and then there's not really time to kind of go over, like, you know, yes, the epilogue at the end of Rebels was amazing, but you know, in this one, I think, you know, there were more episodes for them to kind of, you know, go through Kanan's death and all that. Whereas this one, I would hope to see a 40-minute episode or something where it's like, give me a little more time to kind of digest, because not only is it the end for this particular series, those characters in those situations, as it were, but it's also the end for us. And I do think that they're, you know, like, regardless of what happens, wherever our speculation takes us, I want an ending that kind of lets me enjoy it and go, okay, this is the end of the Bad Batch as it is now. There's going to be something going forward, but I need some time to kind of unpack and digest what has just happened, so I can kind of appreciate what I just spent three seasons watching and having a blast with you doing it. Before we kind of go straight into the accolade, as it were.
And don't forget, Tales of the Empire is stuck in between too. It's like, it's still
May is,
we
May
got
is
Star Wars
nuts.
Till the end of the time. So
all right, yeah.
I'll push right in. I'm going to say this is still at a 9 for me. I haven't peaked above 9 for Pringles cans this season.
Wow.
And I'm hoping that final episode really gives a 10 out of 10. I want to cry. I want to pump my fist. I really want to be totally into it. And I haven't quite hit that high this season yet. So I'm hoping the finale does.
I'm going to match you. I think I think this was well done. I think this is definitely one where all cards are on the table. And I do think if you're going to open up a can of Zillow, I think, you know, whoop Zillow, as we call it, maybe. I think this is the one to do it. Let's really stick this landing next week. It's been a ride either way. I mean, you know, hey, if it doesn't quite end up answering all the questions, I might be a little disappointed, but it's been quite a ride. And it's been fun to kind of do it with you as well. And I wish you nothing but a happy viewing next week, at any rate. But as we kind of wrap things up, hey, look at that. We're actually finishing. We're not like going like
right
an hour and 40 minutes where we, you know, but on this one. But in the, you know, some of these last ones, it's more just what's going to happen next? Because we kind of, you know, a lot of questions have been answered, but will there be more questions next week? All right. But other than a nice soft pillow later tonight, where can people find you online so we can kind of bring this ship to a landing in this breakfast?
The grading is almost done. I actually will be done teaching, so I don't even have to work next Wednesday. So you're really wishing me I'm going to have a big cup of coffee and a disgustingly big Danish or donut of some kind and enjoy the last Bad Batch, and I look forward to it. People can find me online, usually here a lot, because we'll keep rolling with all those things we just mentioned. Also on the podcast Through the Glass Columns, which is a Wheel of Time read-along podcast. I can say this because it's a surprise to my co-host, but he will never listen to this. We have merch coming. So we're an official podcast now. And I'm also on the Long Take Review, which featured none other than Greg McLaughlin in an episode that should be up, I would imagine, by the time this drops or shortly thereafter by the end of the weekend. Because we have to watch the tennis movie and review the tennis movie Monday night. So it'll be out before Monday. So well, thank you as always. I mean, we'll say sappy things next week. But, you know, as we near the end, I think we're both feeling how great a journey this was. And this show and the community that it has helped the two of us foster is, you know, why it is.
So exactly. Great. And not only do I want to thank you, I want to thank all the people who also produce podcasts and are also in the threads, and all the people who've listened and stayed with us through this as we transition from one show to another. It's been quite the adventure. I really appreciate that you come on as much as you do. And, you know, like I said, this is going to probably be the longest year yet, given what all the thing is. I think we've got ourselves booked for a while. But at any rate, if you have questions for the Breakfast Pack on the socials, you can find me on Twitter, X, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, Hive, at Rebel Base Card. I see by the lights going off that no, neither one of us want to go any longer because I have laundry to fold and things like that. But we have other podcasts to listen to figure out, well, are we the only one in the speculation station, or are there others at the train waiting for us to take?
And if you're listening to this as soon as it drops, find Greg at C2E2. Find Greg on the floor at C2E2. He'll have swag packs. He'll have stickers. Harass him until he gives you something.
Yes, I know.
And enjoy the con, sir.
Thank you. Yes, because right after I get in with C2E2, we are getting on a plane. So it's going to be a short one, and I will be back just in time for Batch. It's crazy. But anyway, so for Greg Cass and myself, until next week, when we see the finale of The Bad Batch, we now are going to return you to your podcast playlist, already in progress. This podcast is not affiliated in any way with Topps, Disney, or Star Wars, nor is it endorsed by Disney or Lucasfilm, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All names and sounds, and any other related items, are properties of their respective trademarks and or copyright holders here in the U.S. and abroad. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com.
That's it.